Hi, welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Andrew Kadenak, and I'm a little bit intimidated, but really, really thankful to be joined by Susan Butler, the editor of the Macquarie Dictionary. Thanks for joining us, Susan.
It's a pleasure.
Now, I know we don't like counting, but we will say that you answered an ad in late 1969/1970, and tell us what unfolded from there.
Well, I answered that ad because I've been doing a music degree, but I ran out of money and I'd had a succession of part-time jobs. I was a receptionist in the King's Cross Waxworks and I worked in a belt factory for 2 days and couldn't stand it. And I thought, I'll just have to get a good middle-class job and save up some money. And there was this ad for a research assistant on a new dictionary of Australian English, and I got a bit of linguistics and a bit of English and Latin and Greek and whatever. So I wandered along and applied for that. And got the job. And so at the start of 1970, we began work in earnest on this dictionary of Australian English. At that point, it still didn't have a name. So no one had any real idea how long it would take. The publisher had given us 2 years to do it, and by the end of the 2 years, it was clear that another year at least was going to be needed. And there were various things that happened to the publishing company as well. Arthur Delbridge told me once that I sort of sulked for the first year, really, because I really thought I should have been the great Australian composer. But after a year, I got interested in this whole dictionary thing and got to quite like it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I've heard you describe it as cleaning up after the party is over.
That's right. People think that I have this great power to control and direct the language in the way in which it should go. So I can exert influence over it and for the better, one would hope. But in fact, I have no power at all. It's the people in the language community who have the power. And they are the ones who are constantly shaping, adapting, inventing, sort of deriving new terms for new things, playing around. There's a lot of playfulness in language. And they are the ones that keep the language train merrily rolling along, or to come back to that first image, to keep the party rolling along and keep the party happy. And I'm the one who just comes in afterwards and cleans up and collects what seems to be useful and a record of that particular event. And we put all of that in the dictionary and wait for the next party to happen.
Because it seems like, and we'll sort of talk a little bit more about how the internet has changed the dictionary, but it seems like more than ever, in the global village, even though we borrowed words from other languages, right now languages sort of share the same slight missteps of something. You know, people say totes instead of total, things like that. Awesome is now what you use to describe a pizza instead of the universe. I mean, is it... It's difficult right now, isn't it? Because there's so many ways to say one thing more than ever, isn't there?
Well, English has always been good at that because it has sucked up words from all over the world like a sort of large language vacuum cleaner. And so it's always then had more than one word in a sense for the same idea. And what it does is to make slight nuances, to create slight differences between them so that you have an endless variety of colours and flavours and ways of saying things. When we started work on the dictionary, we were still living in a world where it had just been recognised, really, that there were different varieties of English, and it was hard to explain to people what was meant by this. But probably dialect is the word that people are most familiar with, but then they tend to think of that in terms of British dialects, of Yorkshire and Cornish and so on. But these are broad language communities, broad areas that encompass a language community that is doing its own thing. It's listening and picking up on English from all the other English-speaking countries around the world, but it is developing its own way of speaking English, and it is not beholden to anyone else. It decides what's right and wrong within its own language community. So we were just sort of setting out down that track, really. And then, of course, and at that point in the 1980s, I realised that American slang, obviously, post-Second World War, American English generally was tremendously influential. But there was something like a 10 to 15 year gap something would happen in America, the word would be created, and 10 to 15 years later we would pick up on it. By the time we got to the 1990s, I remember couch potato turned up in the New York newspaper, and then 6 months later it was in a Melbourne newspaper and had spread throughout Australia.
Yeah.
And of course then we got to the current situation where something happened somewhere in the world in this sort of global English, and 2 seconds later, it used to be a day later, now it's virtually instantaneous.
Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of language travels the world with great immediacy. It's particularly the language that is influenced by fashion. So there is an area of language that we choose to put on in the way that we decide what kind of clothes we're going to wear and what kind of hairdo we're going to have. So if we decide that we're going to be goth and have all black, or if we decide that we're going to be a merman and have pale green and blue beards and so on, these are very important decisions. And at the same time, we'll decide whether we're the sort of person who says that's cool or the sort of person who says that's amazeballs. So these
amazeballs is one of my questions, really.
These are fashion statements.
Do you see? I mean, what are the trends in language? Because if we talk about music, and obviously language is an art form in itself, but we talk about music, if we talk about art, there are schools, not necessarily around an era, but around a certain thing. I know that now it's a global village, but are you able to see, I guess, how culture has shifted language in the time that you've been with the dictionary? Like what we err towards? Is it we like to lengthen it at one point, we shorten it now, things like that?
There are distinct characteristics of these varieties, and some of those remain constant. So the Australian way of shortening things with an IE or an O ending, it remains constant. So the latest one that we've put into the Word of the Year selection that's coming up at the end of this year is DESO, for the designated driver. I think that's very nice. And then last year, I think it was DEVO, for devastated.
DEVO's very good.
I'm DEVO. Yeah. So there are these characteristics, and each variety has particular ones and continues on with them. I find that it's always instructive to look at dictionaries of earlier times, you know, to look at an American dictionary of the early 1900s and to look at Dr. Johnson's dictionary and Nathan Bailey's one I'm quite fond of, 1730, and you can feel instantly the flavour of the dictionary and the interests and the preoccupations of the day. Nathan Bailey was a teacher with an interest in science, so his entry for rain is enormous. I mean, most of the entries are quite short, but this one goes on and on because he gives every explanation that has been put forward that he knows about for why rain happens, what it is and what causes it.
It's fascinating. You go.
Well, it's harder to see this in dictionaries that are closer to you.
Mm.
But this is part of the reason for doing Word of the Year each year. And on the dictionary website, you can now look back at, I don't think we're up to 10 yet. Anyway, a succession of years of Word of the Year. And if you look at those, you'll say, oh, yes, that's what it was like in 2006. They were the words that were important. And compare that with today.
Well, particularly now that words like selfie, for example, it is, I'm not going to make a statement, I'm very much a child of today, but it is a statement possibly on the priorities of society and how their words go from place to place. The interesting thing for me about dictionaries as well, and I've heard you describe it, I've heard you also describe how Dr. Samuel Johnson was, but I'll tell you an interesting anecdote with me with dictionaries is that when I was at primary school, there was two schools within the primary school. They were in different locations. So you'd have kindergarten 1-2-3 at one building, sort of, this is a country, small place. Mm-hmm. And then you'd go across the hill and there'd be 4-5-6. And it was nearly like a senior school within a primary school.
Right.
And I remember one school holidays, everyone's in my family are a lot older than me, all my brothers and sisters, and we had a big thing in Macquarie Dictionary. And so when I left year three, I thought, oh, it's the big time. So I went to the dictionary and I wanted to write out the dictionary, and I reckon I got to, I don't know, maybe, I reckon I got to halfway through the A's and went, this is bizarre. But to me at that point, this was what you did as an adult. It was grammar, and the dictionary was kind of, as everyone talks about, the repository of all the knowledge. Like, these are where the words are, the definition. This is, you're becoming a man now. This is what you need to do as a 9-year-old, which is a bizarre thing to think. But dictionaries still in this age have that reputation as being if someone who has the vocabulary, someone that has that reach, that command of language, the knowledge of a dictionary, dare I say it, is kind of the top of the tree. Do you see it that way, or do you see it as being a collection of, well, I guess you already have the collection of after the party, that you're scooping up these words rather than possibly Dr. Samuel Johnson of saying this is the list of at the highest level of language.
This is the best.
Yeah.
Even Dr. Johnson gave up on that notion.
Yeah.
In his preface, he sort of said, that's too hard. I can't do that. I did set out to do that.
Yeah.
But it's the language keeps changing and shifting, and I just can't keep up. The dictionary is in this sort of curious position where, from one end, I'm cleaning up after the party. I'm trying to faithfully create a record of the language as it moves along. And so I'm not imposing my personal choices, for instance. I mean, I have pet hates and loves, as everyone does who takes an interest in language. But I can't impose my choices on the language community. I'm simply trying to record what they're doing. So there are things that are good, there are things that are bad, there are derogatory words, taboo words, vulgar words, all sorts of words. Mm-hmm. But this is what it is at this particular moment. Now, at the other end, there are the users of the dictionary who are coming to the dictionary for advice and guidance. And I think the meeting point is in having the best possible description of the word. So you give its pronunciation and its meaning, but you also describe what area of life it belongs to, and you also describe how people regard it. So usage notes in the dictionary are extremely important, because that's your opportunity to say, agreeance, I'm in agreeance with you. Agreeance is not considered a word by some people in this community, but it has high frequency, and there are people who use it quite comfortably without thinking anything of it. But just be warned, you will encounter people who say agreeance is not a proper word. Let's get rid of agreeance. So the usage notes is, that's where you can give that kind of guidance, and again describe faithfully the splits in the community over what's acceptable and what's not.
Mm. And that's what I really admire about the dictionary, is that when I was at uni, I majored in transgressive fiction. So I've read a lot of bad punctuation, a lot of words, a lot of shortening of words. And I think within that, if we look at the dictionary as a record, it's fascinating. I think it's difficult to pass judgment on words. I'm not a huge fan of grammar Nazis and things like that, because I think ultimately language is to convey an idea or a concept. And I fall in love with beautiful words. I've so many beautiful words and words that I've only just discovered, and I think it's incredible. But as a record, it's incredible. It's kind of, it's a snapshot.
I'm impressed with your ambition to write out the dictionary to take
it.
Parents could have bought you one.
Yeah, it's a very strange 9-year-old. Yeah.
I've met people who like to read the dictionary from cover to cover, and they'll tell me that they're up to the letter G and so on. And of course, I've worked my way through the dictionary often enough to know that A actually was fairly easy. When you hit B, you might have struggled a bit, and C is also a bit difficult. D, F, G, okay, H, I, J, K, now that's good, you're getting on somewhere. L, N, N, O, P is a bit big, Q, R is a bit big, S is the killer.
Yeah.
You would never have made it through S. Never.
That's great. Obviously, with every new word that you put in, there has to be a debate about old words that leave. This might be, I don't know where you're at here, we haven't talked about this, but you did an interview in 2005, and you spoke about, this same question was asked, and you spoke about Alameda as being a word that there would have to be debate. Now, Alameda is a Spanish word for a pathway through. This is 2005 and you said that some people are saying it should go. Is Almeida in the dictionary?
Well, the beautiful thing about the dictionary online is that there's room for everything.
Yep.
I think when we did the first edition of the dictionary, there was debate about Almeida, whether really it had a place in Australian English, who knew it and so on. And so to end this endless discussion, Arthur Delbridge, as the chair of the committee, said, look, I'm going to sort of cut this short a bit. Everyone should be allowed one word that they really like.
Yeah.
And never mind whether it's strictly speaking part of Australian English or not. And so John Bernard really liked Alameda and said, you can't have a dictionary without Alameda in it.
It's a beautiful word.
It is a beautiful word. So Alameda stays in the dictionary.
Yep.
It stays in the dictionary online. But of course, anything less than that, any dictionaries in print these days, you have to seriously consider how much room you've got in the dictionary and what can stay and what has to go.
Yeah, of course. So I'm going to throw some, and I imagine they're all in here, but I'm going to throw some buzzwords at you and you can tell me if they are in the physical dictionary for this current edition.
Okay.
I mean, keeping in mind there are, I want to say there's, how many words are there? What, 100?
There's 170,000 dictionaries covered in the dictionary online. Probably there's something like 130,000 in the dictionary in print.
Well, I'm impressed if you can say categorically if any of these in there, but these are sort of the buzzwords of the last couple of years that I'm interested. Is selfie in the dictionary?
Oh, yes. Yes, selfie went in a year or so ago, and then last year we had the selfie stick.
Selfie stick?
Yes, the device that you use to
with
hold it
with a dash, or is that across?
And you click it, and it allows you to hold the camera out and include a few other people in the selfie shot as well. And then this year it's flat lay pick, where you lie on the floor and take it.
Well, if that's in it, all these are going to be in there. Is amazeballs in the dictionary?
Oh, yes.
Yep. Mansplaining. Is
mansplaining is one of the words this year.
Good.
Oh, no, that was last year.
Okay.
That was last year. Manspreading is this year.
What's manspreading? Should be asked that.
I think we delayed on manspreading just to see whether it was, here today, gone tomorrow sort of word, but it's stuck around. There's a lot of discussion about manspreading. It's the habit that some men have of sitting down and pushing their knees apart, which in public transport means that they're taking up more than their fair share of room, and people next to them get extremely irritated.
That's genius. Jeggings. Is jeggings in the dictionary?
Yes, that went in a few years ago.
Yeah, oh, God,
a lot
times,
of these sort of fashion statements, yes.
Yep.
And jeggings were a thing. It's still a thing, I think.
And I've heard you speak in the past about this, so I know it's in it, but it's bromance.
Bromance, yes. As I said, I was surprised. I thought that bromance was just an invention of the Hollywood magazines for particular film stars who had an enthusiasm for each other. But in fact, it seems to have stuck around quite well. So we've obviously had a need for this, to name this sort of relationship between men.
So I want to ask you a question that you get asked 1,000 times. Can you ask me what the question you've been asked so much is? Because I reckon this is it.
Okay, the most frequently asked question is, how do words get into the dictionary?
Well, no, that's not what I'm asking.
Oh.
I'm going to ask for some of your favourite words.
Oh, right.
That's number two.
Okay. My favourite words. I always find that, after many years, difficult to answer, because part of the problem is that my favourite word is the word that I'm dealing with at the moment.
Of course.
So it's whatever happens to be on my desk on any particular day. So at the moment I've been considering Durif, a wine variety, and also Beltway, the American use of Beltway in politics, which was on the news this morning. So they're my favourite words for today. I have to go and have a look at Beltway and see what we do with Beltway issues. And there was another one to do with political systems. So that's that. But I thought, well, yes, my favourite word has got to be one that I just like as a word, like Alameda.
Yeah.
And so that one is susurration.
What's susurration?
Susurration means whispering. So the susurration of the pine trees, for example.
some assonance in that, isn't there?
It's an onomatopoeia. You can hear the wind whispering in the word.
That's beautiful. And I guess that a favourite word as well, because I think with the growth of spelling bees, and now spelling bees are televised, and ESPN 1 takes spelling bees in the US, but I think it's easy to forget that. Do you see the role of a dictionary to be as a reference tool for definition, whereas increasingly people are starting to see it as how to spell something?
Oh, I think how to spell something has always been the first thing, the dictionary. And so we can, to some extent, keep track of the sorts of questions people are asking of the dictionary, and they are mostly to do with spelling and usage. So that it is still the difference between affect and effect, for instance.
Yep.
And how many M's and C's there are in accommodation. And those sorts of queries are still very high on the list. But then you get down to the oddities and curiosities, yes, that people pick up and are interested in.
Yeah.
And the wonderful thing about the dictionary today is you don't have to jot it down or try and remember it until you can get back to your desk or home or somewhere where you can pull out the book and get the answer to it. You can, on your phone, you can get the answer immediately. So I used to get phone calls from people. I remember one about a breakfast debate about a word between a husband and wife, and they were rather cross and they wanted the dictionary to disinformation. That's right. They wanted the dictionary to adjudicate on the meaning of disinformation. So I'd get that sort of call, and then I'd get someone who would ring up and say, "We were talking about this over morning tea, and we just felt so strongly about it. We felt we had to ring you." I get less of that now because people can just look it up on their phones.
Yeah, and I guess being the editor of such a an important dictionary, particularly in the Australian language, is that it's like I've got a friend who works at the Weather Channel, and you have a point of reference. So he says when he on a plane, he'll introduce himself. He just knows he's going to be talking for the whole plane trip because everybody wants to talk about
the weather.
The weather. Do you find that you have this universal reference point that everyone, we all use language, we all have our own little idiosyncrasies, our own little hang-ups.
Everyone is an expert on language. We may know nothing about sort of deep sea diving or sword fighting or playing in a chamber group, but we all know exactly what is right and wrong in language. And so, yes, everyone's an expert and everyone has something they've noticed and something they've heard and sometimes something they hate. But there's no difficulty in starting a conversation.
Yeah, well, this would go on for hours, but it's so, so incredible to meet you, Susan, to talk about this. So the new edition of the Macquarie Dictionary. People can get it from booktopia.com.au or your nearest good bookstore. Susan, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with us.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.